Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
G'day guys, welcome to another episode. Before we get too far into it, could you please like, subscribe, share, comment, literally anything that you can do. It'll help out a lot. Thank you. Okay, everyone, welcome back. And today I'm here with Luke McCrone, Secretary of the Victorian Tippers United, possibly my arch nemesis, but possibly a good podcast.
Hopefully.
Take it away, Luke. Tell us about yourself, how you ended up here, what you do, and how you're the bane of my existence.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Jimmy. It's good to be here. So I suppose maybe a bit of a background about the business I run and the VTU.
Yeah, please.
Yep. So unlike most of your guests, I'm not a captain of industry. Listen to some of these podcasts. You've got people turning over millions and millions and millions of dollars a year. Pretty small operator. I've got three trucks. PosiTrack. Probably 80% of my work I do through plant hires.
You can say which one if you would like. If not, then keep on rolling.
Yeah, no, I've got a really good relationship with Fleet Plant Hire and NLA. So I've been with those guys for years now. And I really like working with them. So I do that. And sort of as a side thing is the Victorian Tippers United.
Would you say it's just the side thing or...? Probably sometimes a more full-time thing, I would almost think.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it ebbs and flows, So you've got periods where not a lot happens and then you've got periods where it's very intense and takes up a lot of time. It's an association of owner drivers, tip truck owner drivers in Victoria, as the name suggests. Mm-hmm. And we try and do what we can to improve rates and conditions for owner operators in the industry.
Very good.
And I suppose that's how I come into conflict with you from time to time, Jimmy.
There is some conflicts here and there, Luke, that we've always been able to work through. It's a challenging industry because it's just challenging all round to have a collective bargaining power, which is what you're trying to put forward, to try and raise standards. When they are all actually independently ran businesses. How do you find the challenges around that?
Look, it's very difficult, particularly because I think we get compared a lot to the CFMEU because obviously we work in the construction industry. People look at what they've been able to achieve and what they do and, obviously we're not as successful as they've been in securing good terms and conditions. But I think what people need to appreciate is it's a lot harder when you're doing it for owner-operators. So when you've got a group of employees, you can negotiate an EBA. And then that's set in stone, right? Once the EBA is done, that's it. Everybody has to get paid those rates. Everybody has to, is entitled to those conditions. And that's the case for 3 or 4 years or whatever the length of the agreement is. Yep. For owner drivers, we don't really have anything like that. There is no capacity to negotiate a binding agreement that locks everybody in for years at a time. We can reach agreements and we've done that over the last, how long we've been doing this? Probably four.
It feels like forever.
Does feel like forever. Probably four or five years I think we've been going. And we reach agreements from time to time with the agencies. This is where we're going to get rates to. This is where we're going to try and price jobs at. But because there's nothing set in stone and nothing binding.
Well, there is some things binding, and I think that you've selling yourself a little bit short. Probably the nicer part of the podcast as we're introducing you and what you've done and how well you've done in what you do. So the government rates.
Yes.
So they started out, they weren't as prolific across the industry, one might say.
Yep.
And then you came along and you made more people pay them, and then you were able to argue to get them up. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah. So the history of the government rates is probably worth going into a little bit. So my history.
Yep. But why don't we start with your history and then we'll go government rates and what you did there.
Yeah, 100%. So I started out in the industry working for the Transport Workers Union. I was an organiser there for about...
TWU.
I was organiser there for about 8 years. I had a falling out, I suppose is a polite way to put it, with the leadership. Best way to describe it, I suppose, is there was a disagreement about who should be running the show. I thought I should. They thought they...
Who'd have thought?
The people who were running the show sort of thought they should continue running it, and so we had a parting of ways. But before I left, one of the industries I was looking after was the tipper industry. And at that time there was no minimums, government, non-government. In fact, a lot of the time the government jobs paid less because they were booking a larger volume of... I mean, these big infrastructure jobs were booking a larger volume of trucks, so they were able to squeeze the rates a little bit more because, you know, everyone wanted that work. You know, you're going to get 100 trucks on the job. You're going to cut your price a little bit to get the work.
Never cut prices.
Stories aren't true. So we had a bit of a campaign when I was at the union to push for the government using their procurement power. So, you know, they're a large purchaser of earth-moving equipment for their projects that they do. So we went to the government and we said, look, you really should be making sure that you've got a minimum rate on your jobs so the trucks are able to be properly maintained, everyone can get paid properly.
Safety,
blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, we got a sympathetic ear, but really we didn't get much more than that. So myself, Rob Norris, who, you know, was one of the founders. One of the founders at the VTU. He was a TW delegate at the time. We sort of put together a bit of a campaign to put pressure on the government to actually mandate these rates on their jobs. And the big one was that Tulla widening was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And we took, you know, 50 or 60 tippers down there. We blocked the Tullamarine Freeway for a couple of days. Got a lot of negative reaction from the public. But
a lot of negative press too around that time.
Yep. A lot of negative press. But... you know, it got the attention of the people who were making the decisions at Spring Street. You know, so we had that. So we had their attention. And we'd also compiled a list of the fatalities that had happened in the industry over the last 3 years, which was running at about 4 deaths a year. And that's just tippers, right? That's not trucks. It's not nationwide. That's tippers in Victoria. You know, there were about 4 people being killed a year. Most of them not drivers. Most of them just other road users. But we were sort of saying to the government that this is a function of the pressure that's been applied. You know, if you can't properly maintain your truck, you know, if you're working through your brakes because you need to get that extra load in, if you're double shifting your truck because, you know, you really need to pick up that extra night shift in order to pay all your bills for the week, you're going to see people being killed on the road. Mistakes are going to happen, and unfortunately, in our industry, when mistakes happen, people can die. So it was a bit of a mix of the, you know, the direct action we were taking, as well as the good argument we had, convinced the government, as well as they had this, you know, Labor had just got in and they had this big infrastructure plan that they were going to do. So they agreed that they were going to, as part of their procurement policy, there's a whole range of things in there, you know, like apprenticeship levels and, you know, trying to get women in the construction industry and Indigenous,
social procurement,
all that stuff, yeah. So we slotted in with that, and we got minimum rates. Unfortunately, you know, at a little bit after that, I, you know, parted ways with the TWU, and not much really happened. They had this policy sitting on the books, but it was never really enforced.
No, it wasn't. No.
The rates weren't ever adjusted, so they were set, I think it was at $92 an hour or something, it was back then.
Yep.
And they sat still for 3 years. They just didn't move. So I decided that I wanted to contest the TW election after I left. And in order to do that, I needed to be working in the industry. I needed to be driving a truck or working at the airport or something like that. Unfortunately, I was finding it very difficult to get a job in the industry. You know, I'd get a job.
The airport didn't want you?
The airport didn't want me. None of the big transport companies want it. I'd get jobs.
Fancy that.
I know.
None of them wanted you to work for them.
None of them wanted me to work for them.
That is strange. That's strange.
Strange.
They saw Luke Bono and thought, keep it on the employee. He's not going to cause any trouble.
Well, I don't even know if it was that, because I'd have companies would offer me jobs, but then, you know, okay, all of a sudden it'd be withdrawn. So I thought to myself, well, if I buy my own truck, right?
Now we're making money.
Well, it's not even about making money. It's like, well, I can't, if I'm the boss, I can't sack guy. I can't, I'm not going to sack myself. So that's how I ended up in the industry. So I had this truck, you know, I was working away and things were just, you know, it was hard. I mean, we were getting 75, I think, an hour at the time. It hadn't moved for years.
When was this approximately?
I think it was about 8 years ago.
Okay, yep.
About 8 years ago. So Rob and I, you know, we said, look, we'd had meetings with the National Secretary of the TWU to try and get something to happen down here in Victoria, even if I wasn't working there anymore. You know, we wanted the union to take some action because the industry was just unsustainable at the rate that we were getting paid at the time.
TWU has been great for companies like Toll and Linfox and, you know, milk and bread and everything that goes out every day with, you know, a thousand employees.
It's a lot easier with company drivers. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I can remember, I don't know how long ago it was, that TWU was putting on in Port Melbourne there, putting on, and I went there to those meetings and no one knew who I was, of course, and I sat back and I listened about what was happening to the industry and everything else like that. Some really loud voices were there screaming. It was around the time of the Tullamarine freeway widening, so it would have been a decade ago now, I suppose.
I would have been there, yep.
Yeah, you would have been up the front beating your drum. I was just a little minnow down the back and listening as everyone spoke.
The tables have turned.
No, untrue. And so then you ran for election, I believe, and what happened there?
We came close. I think we got, I don't know, 38, 40% of the vote, which, I mean, look, running a union election as an outsider is almost impossible. Like, you get nothing. All you get is a list of names and postal addresses. So you can't even ring everyone up and say, hey, you should vote for me. You've got to send them a letter. Now, there's something like 10,000 members. So to send everyone a letter, you know, you're looking at $1.20 by the time you've got printing. Buy a stamp, you know, just to send them one letter, say, hey, I'm Luke McCrone, and you should vote for me. So it's an expensive proposition. The incumbents have got access to all the workplaces. They've got email addresses. They've got phone numbers. You know, they're not supposed to use all that information.
But also they can go down to the site and say an election's coming up soon while they're there fixing a problem also.
That's right.
You know, like there is a path of least resistance. Yeah. You have the path of most resistance.
Much harder. So, yeah, we did all right. We got 40%, which I think give you an indication. And the other thing you've got to remember is, well, if people aren't happy with how the union's performing, they don't just keep paying their dues. You know, they quit. So all the disgruntled people who agreed with us that the union wasn't doing a very good job, well, they weren't eligible to vote. So
hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah. It's bloody, it is hard. But we gave it a pretty good crack. We got our 38, 40%. We had another go 4 years later. We did a bit better in the next election, but still not quite good enough. Although, interestingly, I do note that all the things we were saying about the union have, you know, come to pass, because the Victorian branch of the TWU has been shut down now by the National Office for being incompetent. So I don't like to say I told you so, but...
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on that part. A business owner commenting on unions too heavily, not a good move, Luke. I'm on thinner ice today than normal, But continue on, because I like the story.
So, you know, that was all going on. In the meantime, I'm, you know, I've got a mortgage to pay and kids and my wife. She wasn't working at the time.
Oh, fucking lucky you got a tipper.
Yeah, I know, lucky.
Now you're going to make some money.
Now I was making all the money. So I'm doing the trucking thing. I'm you know, running elections. And in amongst all that, because I didn't have enough going on, I thought, oh, why don't we set up some sort of an – nobody else is doing it. Why don't we set up some sort of an association for tipper owner drivers, because, you know, it was just getting – well, that $75 an hour wasn't great when I started. 2-3 years later, it was even worse. You know, I was – I was working out at the airport at the time. I was there for about 9 months, and we were doing 9-hour days, working your 6 days a week. Even then, you get to the end of the year, and you look at the money you're spending, the money you're bringing in. I'm thinking, fuck this,
Did you include your jet ski?
Well, the jet ski, obviously, as a legitimate business expense, should be included.
Very true. And your wife's Prado.
The Gucci
Land
handbags.
Cruisers and Gucci handbags. Okay, very good.
So it wasn't – look, the industry wasn't in –
So the industry rates didn't change, and I'll agree with some points. I'm just straight up and down. The industry rates didn't change much. I paid either 80 including or 75 plus for probably 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
But when I started, that's just what it was.
Yep.
But, of course, there wasn't anywhere near the infrastructure jobs that went on. No. And so you come at it from one side, I just come at it from the supply and demand side. Supply and demand says that when infrastructure jobs turn on in a market and the need for trucks skyrockets, then the trucking rates go up. Now, you do give it a little bit of a lift on the way. The VTU gives it a bit of a kick and, maybe some other industry forces. But overall...
Look, I think the supply and demand argument is right. Probably on the contract rates more than the early hire rates. The contract rates did, and they still do, go up and down a little bit based on how much work there is around. But the early hire rates were pretty sticky, and they still are, at least with the agencies that I work for. They're pretty. They don't go up and down depending on supply and demand. They are what they are.
Oh, to a point, maybe. Yeah, but now we do have definitely two rates.
We do have the two rates. So, and that was your question. So. Part of setting up the VTU was we wanted to lift the rates across the board, but also we knew we had this minimum rate that was sitting there that wasn't really being paid. So there were a couple of big jobs. The biggest one at the time was down in Geelong. There were a couple of jobs down there, the prisons. And there were 60 trucks probably.
50, 60, 70 trucks, yeah.
Something like that, that were working down there every day. And they were on that 75 an hour. And we're working with the agency, it was Fleet, the agency that I work for. So that was a bit of a, chasing them for a lot of money. But we used that as our sort of test case, and we pushed and we pushed and we went to government and, we got involved with the Justice Department who were actually building the thing. And in the end, we got, there was hundreds of thousands of back pay paid to the trucks out there. I think from that point on, really we started to see the minimum rates being taken more seriously.
Yeah, definitely. I remember when they started coming out, had to, the prison, you're calling up and you're saying, listen, guys, the argument that we're going to have over a couple hundred grand that, your project might already be closed. How about we talk about it now? It's $10 an hour.
Yeah.
Because it was quite a lift, the first lift.
Yeah.
Because if it was 75... pay, you might have been only charging 80.
Mm.
They might have only been 80 to really tighten up on it. Well, the pay rate went to 92.
Yeah.
So the charge rate's got to go to 100, let's say.
Yeah.
And so you're lifting it $20 an hour, 15. Maybe some other plant hires were making lots of money, and so they might have only needed to lift 10.
And nobody knew about it either. So you got the builders and that. They're like, what do you mean?
Then you're trying to educate them that if the money comes from here, you have to pay this. It's a mandate thing. But it was probably pretty hard from our point of view too, because you just sent out a letter that no one had ever heard of. G'day, I'm Luke. And everyone goes, who's Luke? I'm from the VTU. What the hell is that?
Yep.
And you have to pay 92. And you go, I don't think I do, Bart.
Yeah.
And then it ended up being that once you cause some drama on the site or whatever you got it.
Yeah, that's right.
You did get the rate done.
And so then the next thing, of course, was, this rate hasn't moved. It's supposed to be reviewed annually, and this hasn't been reviewed in years. So what's going on with this?
Took you a long time to get the review done, a few back steps and whatever else.
Nothing's ever quick and easy, as a lot of people would like it to be and maybe think it's going to be. But, again, it took a bit of effort and there's been a few protests and stuff along the way. Where exactly they were, I can't quite remember. But, you know, again, we got the first increase, and then that was another thing. It's like, well, what do you mean the rate goes up? You know, the rate, you know, we've started the project. The project's priced.
Yeah, but then you got like three fucking increases in like 1 year, it felt like. Like you absolutely pumped it. And my customers are saying to me, hang on a second, Jimmy, you literally just increased your rate.
Yep.
I don't know if you remember this time. I don't know when it was. But
well, that was around the fuel. That was when the fuel went through the roof. I don't know whether it was COVID or...
I don't know.
I think it was COVID.
But it was like... I know that there was a time there was an increase 3 months after one increase or 4 months after one increase.
Yeah.
I get it. It's hard. But also at the same time, if the plan hire don't take the money from the truck when they're earning heaps... You know, is there a flip side of the coin here that says that when the rates are shit, that the rates are shit? Like, at the end of the day, a business is a business, and, like, no one's guaranteeing my earnings.
No.
And I started out in a truck.
Yep.
And then, you know, there is at least some money in trucking. There has to be.
Not at the moment, but, yeah, there should be.
Well, you'd hope. I still think that there is. I think that some of the, you know, the foundational pillars of business ownership in Australia have been eroded. Oh, that's good, that one. That'll do just nicely. Okay,
put that one on Instagram.
But they've been eroded, you know, like people expect more for less. People want to earn more for less. But also, like, everyone's doing it tough. Not everyone has the mechanisms to, you know, let's talk inflation, you know. Mortgages go up, your carton of, you know, milk or eggs is what costs more at the supermarket. They can't go to their boss every 3 months like what the VTU did to us and say, it costs more money for my milk. I need another pay rise. But yet, so it turned into, you know, a thing that said, hang on, this part of how you've built this rate has changed.
Yep.
Which was the fuel, and it did change.
Yeah,
but you weren't just going for that any time either. You were trying to get as much of the pie as possible because at that time you were also – because I actually had some conversations with you at the time about if it's just fuel, I think I can sell just fuel. But you're actually trying to change other things as well as the fuel that are going up, and that was a difficult sell.
Yeah, so at that time there were a couple of things going on. We had – changing the cost model in relation, so, you know, for the benefit of everybody who doesn't understand, the way that these government minimum rates are determined is that there's a cost model. So, you know, they go through, they include everything, but a lot of the stuff, line by line, truck repayments, servicing and repairs, fuel, insurance, on and on and on, right?
General wear and tear at a cost per kilometre and an average cost per day. As well is a line item there. I know this like the back of my hand, so I can argue with you specifically about it.
That's right.
Yep.
So the our position at the time with the government was the price of fuel has just jumped dramatically overnight, you know, almost overnight. Well, I remember, you know, people at the time were saying to me about fuel, and I was like, it's not, you know, it's gone up, but. So are our rates, you know, it's still, we're still tracking along all right. And then a week later I'm filling up and I'm like, fucking hell. Like,
yeah, it mid $2 or something from under $2 in a month.
Well, it had gone from, I mean, if you go back 2 or 3 months earlier, it wasn't much more.
$1.80.
I filled up during COVID for $1 a litre. So this is unreal.
He filled up once during COVID from a backyard out of a container for $1. And then, but the point still stands.
But it just went up overnight, right?
It did. It went up 50 cents to a dollar overnight.
Yeah. And I'm always...
For everyone in the entirety of Victoria, it went up.
Yep. Everything else was going up, though, too. Like, you couldn't buy concrete, couldn't buy steel. Everything in the construction industry was going up.
It was, but, like, builders couldn't buy windows, but were still contracted to buy the windows going broke. The concrete plants are still... They can't get their rock, and they don't get a government change in rates. There's no rise and fall. Like, rise and fall in contracts doesn't exist. This is a lot of the arguments that went on during COVID. You know, there's a lot of contractors out there that did not get, like, they don't have the mechanism to go back and change it. It was meant to be reviewed annually. Mm. It wasn't meant to be reviewed what felt like monthly. And it's part of the gripe that from this side of the table with a few people standing behind me, you can't see actually, that we had there, because it just seemed like, hang on, the fuel's gone up and insurance cost has gone up. We're going to lobby the government and try and get more, but the rates are skyrocketing anyway because
of... These mystery people that stand behind you were happy to not give us a rate increase for years. No rate increase at all for years. And then they complain we get two in a year, you know?
There was more than two. It was three.
Cry me a river.
It was three. Yeah, I will. I definitely will. Because we are the ones who have to walk in and actually get the money. Because it's not as easy as just getting the money, because there's, you know, you got the government level here. You got level, and then us. Yep. So this might be a big top-tier builder who then subcontract out. We can all fill names in here, you know, and then the plant hires sit here. These guys are getting squeezed just as much, if not more, and trying to get money out of them can be challenging, to say the least.
Look, I'm sure those people have their issues. I don't doubt that they do. You know, I listened to the podcast you had with Anthony Ring on the way over here, and, you know, he's obviously got issues that I don't have.
Mm.
You know, it was good.
I think everyone's got their own course that they've got to run too, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so that's not necessarily a here or there thing, because at the end of the day, you also have your issues. You had three trucks parked up when there's no work and your fuel's going through the roof, you know.
But I'm not here to represent businesses like that.
No.
You know, I'm an owner-driver. We've set up this association to represent owner-drivers. And we're going to push as much to get, you know, to get as much for our members as we can.
100%. Do you get much kickback?
From
anyone?
Everywhere. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shit,
actually,
yeah.
I think you're more hated on the internet sometimes than I am.
There are days. There's no doubt about that. There are days when I look at it and I think, fucking hell. But you just got to remember that the Facebook's not real. Like, it's not the real world.
I don't know. People hate you in real life too, I think.
Well, I've never met those people. That's not true. I have met some people, but, you know, by and large, everyone you meet is, and whether they're a builder, like I was talking to a bloke the other day who's got quite a few trucks of his own. He's a big asphalt company. He's supportive of what we're trying to do. He doesn't want to pay more for trucks, of course. He's
overall, I see the benefit. You know, this is true because we've engaged. Oh, no, 100 times on 100 different problems, you know. Like, I don't know how many plant hires you're ringing, but let's say there's 10, which I'm sure there's not too many more than that, but let's say there's 10. Me and you have had built a relationship over the years that I am actually supportive of the rate increase mission, let's say, because I'm a brokerage.
Yeah.
Brokerage at a percentage means that I get to make more money. If you get the rate increase over the line, I don't have to.
100%. But and then, not only that though, right? I see it as a benefit to you, as, you know, you hire a lot of trucks. You know, you dig a lot of holes.
I do.
I think where rates are at the moment, it's not sustainable and it's bad news for the industry.
But the let's take just the tandem rate overall. Well, you're not talking government rate, are you? That's sustainable, because the fuel prices dropped, but I didn't get my decrease back. Just so you know, I was waiting on a letter when it dropped from $2.10.
Well, if you look at $2.20. If you look at the cost model,
you'll see
the fuel component has dropped.
It has dropped.
It has dropped.
What about the other components? They've gone up.
Because things have gone up. My mechanic doesn't charge me any less. Inflation. He charges me more.
Oh, got it.
My wages bill for my employees. Do you think it'll ever go down? Or it goes up. Will I ever get a discount from my mechanic? I'd just be happy if he did the fuck all. I probably shouldn't be swearing.
No,
so
you
much.
Can.
I
you can swear here. Swear. Be happy if he did the fucking work. Don't worry. I got a nice, lovely text message this morning. Hey, Jimmy, just driving down the Mornington Peninsula freeway and your car's on the side of the road. Got picked up from the mechanic yesterday, and it looks like it's blown the motor. So thumbs up.
Jesus. Yeah,
from yesterday. So that's a good day for me. You know, I don't know what
At least it was a car, not a truck. That's a much more expensive
proposition. I have blown some truck motors too.
I'm sitting there gathering dust. It's been there for 2 years. I just can't get anyone to fix the fucking thing.
I have a truck that the guy, we found out that he wasn't doing his pre-starts. We sent it for service that he lost 2 days about 3 weeks ago. This 3 weeks from the incident happened. But doing his pre-starts correctly on paper, but not doing the pre-starts correctly himself, because he said he didn't know how to check the water or oil, even though in our induction process, when you come, we show them, we train them, and then they're meant to whatever. And then he drove the truck with no oil or water and blew the motor of a brand new truck.
Didn't it shut down or something? Shouldn't it?
You would think so.
Yeah, right.
Didn't. Just kept driving it with all the codes, beepers, buzzers, because he didn't want to have any time off. Drove it for 2 days, knocking its head off until he drove back in. And my yardman's like, what the fuck? Because it had white smoke puffing out the exhaust.
God. Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's a good industry. So anyway, yeah, we'll continue on. I can't remember what the next thing you were going to talk about was.
Well, I was just talking about generally what we're trying to do is of a benefit to the industry as a whole, because the rates at the moment are just completely unsustainable. Like, I had a quick look while I was waiting for you to get here this morning. I pulled up a spreadsheet where I put all the work that I do, the different trucks do. Over the last 12 years, it's only a very quick job I've done of it, but I think the average my truck and trailer's making is about $1,100 a day. That's what he's averaging over the last year. Now, you can't run a truck at that rate. That truck is losing money. Fortunately, the work I do in the machine, you know, this is the importance, I think, of being a little bit diversified. It makes things a hell of a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the truck and trailer might not be making money, the tandem is doing okay. It's on a government job, doing okay. I make good money in the machine when I work it. That sort of keeps the whole show on the road. So $1,100, you cannot pay a driver, maintain a truck, make truck repayments. Well, you just can't do it. So
Hang on a second. I play devil's advocate here, but not only that, because first off, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, that truck was on over $2,000 making money.
Not that, I didn't own it. I missed the boom, but yeah.
You missed that?
Yep.
So if we, instead of taking the metric as the last 12 months, why don't we take the metric as 36 months, put all of that together, and then your average might be $1,500 per day.
Might be.
Yep. And in which case, is it making money at $1,500 a day?
$1,500, where I think the rates need to be, I think they need to be at the $1,600. I think that's a fair rate for a truck and trailer to be making. I think at $1,600, you know, you can pay your driver properly, you can make your payments on the truck, you can maintain it, and this is a dirty word in this industry, you can make a profit. It seems that people don't think trucks are entitled to make profits.
So not only can you pay, so the owner drivers who you're with are paying themselves properly.
They should be able to. I don't think they are at the moment, but they definitely should be able to.
They're paying off an asset.
Yep.
That they then get an intrinsic value that is being built up there by a $400,000, $300,000, $200,000, whatever number. The number's not important. Dollar truck, pay it off over 5 years.
Yep.
And get a kick in your pocket of $100,000, let's say, it as a depreciation.
You're talking about for tax?
No, I'm talking about the truck value drops from 200 to 100.
Over 5 years.
Yep. So then you get to keep that.
Yep.
Because the next truck's going to cost you 200 as well.
Yep.
Apart from inflation and all of that. So now you're on an extra $20,000 a year on top of the paying correct, and then you get to have profit on top of that, and that should be legislated.
So when I talk about profit, I would include the costs, the equity that you're building in the truck as part of the profit. If you have a look at, because our big
yep.
push is, you know, we've got these government rates and we think they should be applied across the board. We don't think it should matter whether you're on a government job or a non-government job. We think those rates should be paid. Now, if you have a look at how they factor in buying the asset, like they put a balloon, I think, of 47% or something. Well, you can't even get that sort of finance arrangement. Basically, they've set up the truck ownership component of the cost model
mm-hmm.
to allow for almost no equity being built. So the cost model the government has allows you to pay yourself a bit more than the award. I think it's about 30-something bucks an hour. And
which is still 20% more than the award, I believe, isn't it? I think it was low 30s to high 20s.
Yeah, look, it's come up. It's gone up again recently.
I don't want to get too bogged down in the figures either.
But yeah.
But
it's reflective of what you would expect to make as a driver. What if you if you went out there tomorrow and advertised, you know, we want you to drive this truck and trailer and we're going to pay you 26 bucks an hour, whatever the award rate is.
Yep.
You know, you wouldn't get any applicants. You wouldn't get anyone worth hiring anyway. Like, if you want to get a good driver at the moment, you've got to be paying them north of 30 bucks an hour. So if I own the truck.
At least.
Yeah. If I own the truck, why should I be factoring my labour in at below what the market is paying for drivers?
I'll agree with that, yep.
So it's got the labour in there at about what you'd pay for a driver. It allows for 5% profit on your investment and, you know, it allows you to pay off a truck with something like a 47% balloon. Really, you're not going to get a lot of equity in the truck.
Depends. Kenworth just keeps its money. So you're getting one of them, you hold it, you pay it off and then you can do that. But their cost model doesn't – the finance arrangement and stuff like that, it's all wrong. How they've built
it
that,
wrong, yeah.
I think that could be better. But then, so let's agree to that part. In an ideal world, you get this.
Yep.
Let's flip this around and talk about from this side of the table now, because like that makes sense. Owner driver should get that. Now, if the rate is to move a cubic meter of dirt, 10 bucks, let's just call it a flat 10. Another agency that doesn't live in your ideal world is paying 10. Me building it on your rates is 13.
Yep.
Cubic metre of dirt's a cubic metre of dirt. They need it moved. They don't care where it goes to. I price 13. I reckon I might go bankrupt in a month.
Yeah.
One thing that other unions have done really well is to be able to support and the industry from the other side too, which I'm not going to talk specific unions because they all do it at some point. They all help.
Like that's more of a construction union type of thing.
It is, but there's also other unions that support the businesses in making sure that they, you know, A plus B equals C. Like it's not, you know, everyone calls that different names and whatever else. But it's a real help if the EBA jobs are paying out like that are protected.
Yeah.
You know? But there is none of that because at the end of the day, if someone can get the trucks there for $10, they do.
Yeah. And that's the problem that we face. Now, if the government was to step in and use the powers that it has, look, legislation's on the books, right? We've got the Owner, Driver and Forestry Contractors Act.
Yep.
It confuses a lot of people, right? They're like, well, we drive trucks. We don't work in forests, but it just describes the two.
It's for owner drivers, yeah, up to owning three trucks, I believe.
That's right.
So you have to drive one yourself in the three?
Spot on.
There we go.
So it's owner drivers, but then also the same legislative arrangements apply to forestry contracts. Now, we don't really have any of those in Victoria, I don't think, much anymore, but when the legislation was introduced 20 years ago or whatever, there were crews working out in the bush, and they had a similar sort of problem. They were working for the big sawmills and, you know, they were small operations that might have had one truck and, you know, a felling operation. But for our purposes, it's owner drivers, right? The law sits on the books. It allows the government to set minimum rates, right, across the industry. So it could be for tippers, could be for agi drivers, you know, whatever section of the industry they want to regulate.
Mm-hmm.
It sits there. We think they should exercise those powers because when trucks are not being paid enough money, it is dangerous for the public. Well, if you've got trucks that aren't being properly maintained, rolling around out there on the streets where, you know, your family is and my family is and everyone listening to this, it's a danger, right? So the government's got a role in the same way that they say, you know, you can't just go and bury asbestos wherever you like. You know, they've got a role in regulating to make sure the community is safe. And we say they should use that power to make the community safe by making sure there's enough money in this industry to run a safe truck.
Not one person can sit down and argue with that because you've positioned yourself in the safety, you know, holding the safety banner that says, if you do what I say, the community will be safer.
It's It's a happy coincidence. That's all it is. And it's a fact too.
Yeah, I think that a happy coincidence for you to say that makes it draws, you know, possibly connects dots, you know, because from my end, I can't guarantee that even if I pay the money that I'm going to get a maintained truck rocking up.
No.
And so what happens then? Because I'm paying the right money and I still get an untrained driver who might not be able to do his tasks correctly. I still get a guy with an unmaintained truck that is still unsafe, and then the responsibility is still on me to try and make sure that I have safe systems in place for that.
You can make a demand of a truck that's getting paid properly. Like, where are the best trucks in Melbourne at the moment?
I don't know. I can't answer those questions.
The best trucks, the best maintained trucks, the best fleet of trucks be working on the North East Link. You know, look at the work Landtrak does. I'll give them a bit of a shout out. Look at the work.
Do you know what I'd like to say? I actually messaged Gary and I said it was a really great thing what it looked like he was doing out there at that tunnel. It is an absolutely impressive operation.
Yeah,
he is absolutely smashed it out the park with his business partners and everything else like that.
Oh, and Eddie too. You know, Eddie had a lot to do with that.
I think he was the spearhead of it.
I think he was.
I don't know, Eddie, but I did message Gary probably 3 or 4 months ago when it was cranking, yeah? Like, they are moving some earth.
They are moving some earth.
Like, and it's a pleasure to watch from a guy who likes trucking.
And they'll put, you know, if you want to get on that job, you've got to go bring your truck. They'll put it over the pits. Like, they'll do a proper look at it.
Yeah.
They've got a good, safe fleet of trucks out there. Now,
they do.
If you turned around and said, we want to do that, but we're going to pay, you know, $1,000 a day on contract, you wouldn't get anyone coming down here.
Probably not. Like, it depends. If I'm the only one with work, I would.
Even then, I can't, you know, I can't deliver a truck to the standard that they expect on that project for $1,000 a day. I can't do it. I'll go broke. There's no point. Like, I don't care whether you're the only one who's got work. What's the point of losing?
But that's also untrue, because at some point someone does. You know that. That's the argument that we've had over the rates. Like, you sit down and you headbutt me over the rates and you say, Jimmy, you're paying $10 a cube. That's fucking bullshit. Yep. And then I lose the job to someone paying $9 a cube.
That's right. That's why we want, you know, an industry approach.
Yep.
We want everyone in the industry to have to pay these rates. And then once those rates are being paid, then the standards can increase.
You think you're going to get there?
Look, I think we were heading in the right direction. You know, we had that big strike at the end of last year. I've got to accept my share of the responsibility here. I don't think we communicated very well with our members and the industry more broadly about the next steps, you know, and how it was going to go on from there. You know, we had a big strike. Rates went up on the non-government jobs. You know, they went up to about, they were getting, they're up to about $1,400 a day.
I'll say 13, 14, yeah.
13, they 14. Were,
yeah. I think 2 weeks.
Yeah, it went up.
It lasted, yeah.
You know, we had Christmas and stuff, and then the rates, you know, and the work just wasn't there to support it. So the rates started to fall.
This is the thing. Like, you just for one sentence, like, you know, just throw the work wasn't there to support it.
Yep.
If we were booming, you know, which when we were, the VTU was able to help with that boom.
We kicked it along 100%.
100%. Now, we are in a non-booming market. One of the reasons I'm sitting here doing a podcast, because, you know, the more branding, the better. But if the work isn't there to support it, then that's what I'm saying about the $10 a cube, you know. Like, if someone's going to rock up and do it for $9 a cube, and even if I remain at 10, which let's say is under the 13 that you want, I'm still going broke.
Yep.
So at some point I have to put in the job at 9.
Yep. In the current environment, without any regulation that governs the industry, that's 100% right.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't say the agency I work for, which, as I said, I think they're great. I think they do their best to support drivers. What are they going to do? They're not going to go out there and price jobs at $1,400, $1,500 a day and get nothing.
I actually think that most of the plant hires, some are a bit rogues, some are a little bit tough, but I think that most – and you would have spoken to all the owners. Most of them actually want their trucks to earn money.
Yep.
The problem is that we come at it from, if it's 10 bucks a cube, it's 10 bucks. And until there's something that makes it 13, it's going to be fucking 10. In fact, 980 is my price.
Yeah.
You should get me. And it, like, wanting to look after trucks, helping them out. I've helped out heaps of trucks, not looking to toot my own horn, but, you know, I have. But it all just comes down to $10, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look, you're right. I have, and the easiest thing for the VTU to do would be just to get out there and kick the shit out of the plant hires and blame them and make them out to be the devil.
Fuck, isn't that what you do?
I think that's probably what we used to do more. But now that I spent more time talking to the owners of the agencies and getting a better picture of what the industry actually looks like, you know, I had a pretty good idea from the little world I was in. I had a tandem. I knew that sort of part of the industry. I didn't really know the truck and trailer stuff that well. I spoke to a lot of people about it, but it wasn't something I knew as well. So over the last, you know, few years that I've been doing this and trying to get my head around the whole industry as a whole, dealing with the agencies more and more, you can see that they are, I think, trying to do the best they can. I mean, all you need to do is look at a job where the straight carts are always the shittest paying jobs. Where an agency's got their own tip, like CiviWorks, for example, they got their own tips. I know when the jobs are cutting into their own tips and they can charge the clients a little bit more, they pay the trucks a little bit more, you know? So
you would have seen more rates than I've had hot dinners. Like, you've gotten all of them, you could put them together. But I reckon we're probably somewhere a little bit closer. And I know that they're, like, getting closer towards the end, but I know that there was a couple of things you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, which I want to make sure that you get around to, because you know, it was important before we walked in.
Absolutely. Well, just to finish off this conversation on rates and something that I do want to touch on, you know, to anyone who's listening to this who, you know, books trucks, you've got to have a think about those rates and the impact that has on safety. I'm just going to hammer that again. I mean, can you imagine, you know, there's having a safety meeting, you know, they've done whatever important business they need to do at their safety meeting. You know, they've decided to change the colour of the fire extinguishers or something like that, and we all have to race out and buy new fire extinguishers.
Change them from a 3 kilo to a 4.5, you mean?
You know, yep. make us put another one, perhaps at the back of the truck. I don't know, some very
inside
important...
Inside the bin, under the dirt.
Some very important safety initiatives they've come up with. And now they come up with this new idea, they're going to take one of their bits of earth-moving equipment, right, and they're going to not maintain it at all, and they're going to put an operator in it, and they're going to pay them less than minimum wage, right? And they're going to take it off-site, and they're going to maybe drive it past a few schools in the neighbourhood. And just to make sure they're driving it past as many schools as often as possible, they're going to make sure they don't take any breaks, maybe pay them a little bit of extra money if they speed, you know, so they can go past that school as many times as possible.
You've worked on this before. It's very good.
This is the situation we're in with trucks. You know, they just – it's as if the safety stuff doesn't – and I've had a meeting.
No, I just can't swallow it all. I just can't, because you're going to sit there and you're going to say that while I agree with, you know, you're saying that the state of the industry is that bad, yeah – You're making it one broad stroke across it, making every truck driver sound like they are doing their absolute best in the business to maintain the highest fleet and do the most work that they can possibly do and do the most loads that they can, and they always turn up early and they always work when the work is available. And that's just bullshit, because – they
generally
don't.
I'm talking generally. There's bad apples everywhere.
I think that if you came and sat on the other side of the fence sometimes, there's a lot of bad apples. I don't have people maximise their earning potential daily to what they can and then complain about from your end that I can't maintain my truck, but you rocked up at 9, you went home at 1 and you can't drive.
So that leads us into perhaps the next thing that I reckon is worth talking about.
You'd never believe I set that one up perfectly.
Perfect segue.
Put it through the sticks.
He's a professional podcaster. One thing that I've noticed about the industry as I've been working in it, nobody ever tells you or teaches you how to run a successful small micro business. You know, 'cause most people who work in this industry are never going to be Jimmy Starbucks, right? They're never going to have a fleet of trucks and machines and, you know, all this stuff. And most people, I mean, that's probably not, I was going to say most people wouldn't want to. I think they like the idea of it, but they wouldn't want to do all the stuff that goes into doing it. You know, they're happy with their one truck. You know, maybe they want to branch out and get two, mm-hmm. and that's fine, right? That's perfectly fine. But, and you'd have some insight in this, working not only in the office, but having started out with trucks and done pretty well out of it. How do you, what do you need to do to run a successful micro business in this industry? What separates the guys that are working every day from the guys that are working 2 or 3 days a week? And how do, what changes are those guys that are working the 2 or 3 days, what changes do they need to make to their business in order to be getting the extra work or the better jobs?
Okay, so first off, I can't speak for everyone. However, I will say some just broad strokes, not even necessarily from my company Starbuck, but just Jimmy Starbuck, let's say. Let's put relationships in the bin as well, because in the bin, they are outside of this conversation, because they're a standard. Every business must work on their relationships, just like when you go to buy a coffee in the morning and the coffee girl greets you with a big smile, you're going to go back to that coffee shop.
Yep.
You must work on your relationships. You must be kind to the people you're working with or working for. You know, your customer isn't just your plant hire. Your customer is your plant hire's customer.
Yep.
That one there is pretty simple. Then there are some fundamentals of business that people have forgotten that will make anyone successful in any micro business. You got to be early.
Got to be early.
Yeah. Being early is important. The guy at the front of the line who's standing there, or, you know, like, you know it, if you're at the pre-start and then a truck rocks up after pre-start, that other truck's leaving first. They're going to ask for Luke back, because it actually has a little bit of the relationship build intertwined with the being early part.
Yep.
You know, it also means that you can do a more efficient job, because you're going to find out about the job before you're on the clock, just in some sort of communication that happens. You know, hey, mate, what are we doing today, while you're not on the clock? The guys who rock up and walk in at 7:03, because it's never 3:02, or even if it's 3:07, you know, if they were to stand there at 7:10 and just have a, you know, cup of Nescafe or International Roast, it means a lot.
Yep.
Do your paperwork.
This is from the plant hire. You want your paperwork done properly.
For everyone, from when I was running my business, the most important thing is paperwork. Underneath that comes the job. I have done the most beautiful job and not been paid for it because I didn't do my paperwork.
Yeah.
If you don't invoice, if you don't keep your licenses or pay your insurance or whatever else, you just become the guy, or input your dockets from the plant hire side. I had a guy give me 7 months of dockets for 2 trucks.
He's doing all right. I couldn't float you for 7 months.
This was years ago.
Yeah.
7 months of dockets. It was well over $100,000. Well over.
There you go. Did you get paid?
You got almost all of it, actually.
Okay.
Like, some of it I couldn't actually – I didn't have the processes back then. Now I've got the processes a little bit better and tighter, but I didn't have the processes back then to be able for me to invoice for that.
Yep.
But then I probably got him 90%, 95% of it, because a lot of the jobs that he was on, he was 2 truck and trailers that was working for me 3-4 days a week. The 2 truck and trailers were on my excavation jobs.
Didn't you notice? Because you don't have a client to invoice.
Well, yeah, the client was Starbuck Excavation.
Yeah, okay.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Then we had noticed a few times, we'd reminded him about his dockets a few times over the time. But are we going to be sending that guy to work? Like, first off, we can't make the system that says, oh, anyone who doesn't invoice us, don't pay. Get him. How am I meant to tell people to book him?
Yeah.
It's better to say, do not book that truck. His paperwork ain't done.
Yeah. Do you get much feedback from the clients? Do they ring up and say, hey, we had this truck here, he was great?
Yeah.
Heaps. You do?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Daily.
Okay.
daily. And if you make some sort of log about that, which everyone doesn't talk about, the log of pros and cons.
Which I can't. I mean, we talked about this briefly the other day, right?
We did. You wanted to bring it up?
I've been with Fleet for 8 years.
Yep.
They've got a rating system.
Yeah, because otherwise you wouldn't be working for them for 8 years because you'd have to go find other work.
Did they tell me? I didn't know. I assumed they had one.
Of course. Of course. But hang on a second. Do you want to come into my – do my trucks want to come into my office and I'll just show them how I run all of my business? Like, at some point, like, for the love of
but
God
– don't you want to send out trucks that the clients – like dealing with?
Yeah, that's why everyone's got a rating system.
Right, don't you want to have trucks that are doing that? But, like, why is all this stuff kept a secret? Like, if this is how you want people to, you know, if this is how you want your subbies to work for you, why don't you tell them?
That's a good question. I'm the one doing, like, I'm here, I'm doing the podcast and I'm happy to answer. Like, my fundamentals are be early, do your paperwork, don't be a dickhead, right? And at the end of the day, if I say, so this is a very big one that I run into a lot that you'd never believe happens as much as it does. If I sent my clients invoices, overcharging them daily,
yep,
or weekly, or, you know, whenever it's happened, they wouldn't give me the work. If you're filling out that your return trip is going to take you 2 hours when you're tipping in Pakenham and you live in Hampton Park...
It doesn't matter where they live.
I know it doesn't. You're saying round trip, yep, and everything else and blah, blah, blah. But not many people get paid all the way back to the job anyway. The rates, it doesn't have the loading in it. We can argue all day. But if then you look at it and say, okay, well, I've done 4 trips and it's, you know, let's say 7 till 1 is 6 hours. Yeah, doing some maths. And I've done 4 trips. It's 1.5 hours per trip.
Yep.
Last trip, I want to sign off till 4.
Traffic. You got traffic. You got to remember that.
Traffic on the trip that you're not actually taking back, which is fine. There is an argument there.
Yeah. Well, do you think right, it's worth talking about that, right?
Yeah, but hang on
a
second.
We are not paid to travel to and from the job generally. In fact, not at all. You know, my truck starts this
contract
morning.
Contract rates are.
Hey?
Contract rates are. No. Yes, they are. They're worked out on a round trip.
From your yard or from the job site?
From the job site, round
right,
trip.
So we drive our trucks for free. Look, my driver starts that truck up.
Does a taxi driver for free to pick up his car?
What about an excavator operator? You know, when I've got a machine on a job, right, I'm paid, I start burning fuel at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
If I had an operator in that posse, I'd be paying him from 7 o'clock. Right? You start time 7, this is where you're starting.
Yep.
Right, so my costs, the meter starts running at 7.
Why is every single one of your costs covered? And when the hell do I get to go to my clients and say, listen, my docket girl cost me 12 bucks?
Recovering your costs, you're going broke.
Yeah, but when you are recovering your costs, you're making profit. And so, like, this is business.
That's what we're doing in business, Jimmy. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, but how can you be the only business that actually has a safety net underneath it? Heaps of my mates go broke and heaps of my mates end up, or your businesses in general, have to do things for free, just like an Uber has to drive to pick you up, that the rate is worked out that has some included travel.
But what I'd like the listeners to understand is what our costs actually are. Right? And our costs start an hour before we start getting paid, and they keep going after we stop getting paid. So my driver will start the truck at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:45. That's when I start paying him.
We've only got 5 minutes left, but we need to round out this what drivers can do, even though we've only just warmed up, because we could talk for a long time,
we could,
argue
yeah,
a little bit. But it's got nothing to do with me at that point. It's got nothing to do with you at that point. It's got to do with the fact that there's feedback coming back in that said that this driver just tried to charge 2.5 hours.
Yeah, no, sure.
Or 2 hours to come back.
Yep.
He's done an hour and a half trips all day, and now he looks at me and says, traffic is bad because the traffic's really bad in Paran at 4 o'clock. And you go, but you're going to Hampton Park, mate.
Sure.
So, and then
good paperwork, be reasonable on the return trip.
Be reasonable overall.
Feedback from the clients.
But mind you, all underneath the relationships, because as you know, there's truck drivers who are shit out there that work every single day that know one person in allocations.
Yep.
We, from the plan hires perspective, we pay the people in allocations to build these relationships with people so that they go to work. So if we say, stop driving to Pakenham and start driving to Bacchus Marsh, they go, oh, yeah, thank you very much. We'll call her Aurelia because it's a name that is, everyone knows she works for me. We'll call her Aurelia. They say, oh, no problem, Aurelia, thank you. They don't say, oh, fuck you, I'm fucking not going, blah, 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 because there's a relationship there from us.
But what about dealing with, this is something else I wanted to touch on, and we're short for time.
We are.
And I'm a bit, I've got a bit of personal interest in this. I'd like to see more people dealing with issues themselves and actually raising problems with the agencies. But people have got this idea that if I ring up and say, hey, this rate's shit, they'll stop giving me work. That certainly hasn't been my experience.
So just so you know, like we would get that rate shit, and I'd like to bring this up. We get that rate shit every single day.
Yep.
However, just so you know what happened, I can remember having a full-blown argument with a guy who said that his quad was only going to make $3,000 in a day, and that was fucking unacceptable. That how could he run his truck? It is a safety matter. You know when this is, and you know that these people were out there.
Yeah.
$3,000 a day is a ridiculous rate to pay for a truck.
Guys thought they should be able to pay their truck off in 12 months. They thought that was a reasonable.
Then, now, those same guys might be running those trucks for much less.
They might be.
Yes.
They definitely are.
They definitely are, and they're still saying, I need this money to maintain my truck. And that up-down was the worst thing that happened for the industry across the board because it removed, I agree that a safe truck is better for literally every person, and I know that there is a relationship between how much we have to pay for it to how safe that truck can be.
There was not one fatality in the industry when those rates were booming. It wasn't one.
Is that true?
That's true. I can send you. We've got the list of every fatality that's happened in this industry. I've been keeping a list of it. And there was about an 18-month period where there was not an accident involved.
Causation or correlation. There we go. I'm getting better. Because there was no...
It was other factors at play.
There's no one on the road.
We were
in lockdown.
Yeah, but then we came out of lockdown and everyone had forgotten how to drive,
And then now we have working from home, less people on the road and more traffic because people can't drive, so trucks are going slower. So there's a...
We've got a more modern fleet at the moment, I think, than we would have had 5 or 6 years ago, in part because of that boom. Everyone raced in. They couldn't get trucks. People bought new trucks. There's a more modern fleet. But you are going to see over the next 2 or 3 years, if rates don't change, those trucks are not going to be maintained. The quality of the drivers that are going to be jumping in those trucks is going to continue to decline, and we are going to start to see more fatalities.
The quality of drivers across the board did not increase when the rate increased, though. I don't think.
Takes time.
The quality of driver and there really needs to be, and I hate even saying the word initiative because there seems to be an initiative every single everywhere in this country, but there needs to be an initiative for good driving because the bar is set very low, someone to help teach them, and whatever else, because I reckon I've had 100 people ask me how to jackknife a truck and dog online. 100 people. You can find videos online of people fucking around with it, but no one even really teaching which is a real challenge to put up with. Is there any last thoughts that you would like to put out? Do you think the rates are going up?
I mean, they've got to. They can't stay where they are. Something's going to happen. Supply and demand's going to kick in. People are going to get... it's hard, right? Because when the rates for brickies go down and people don't think there's any money in it anymore, they put their trowel away and they go and do something else. And that's one less brickie. But when rates for trucks are shit, what happens? People sell their truck. Some new sucker buys it. Truck doesn't go anywhere. They're still here.
Oh, there's plenty of trucks parked up, though.
They're parked up, but they're not. They're there ready for work.
They're waiting in the wings.
They're waiting in the wings.
For supply and demand to kick in, because that's the side of the fence that I sit on. The amount of abuse that I have copped over the years for destroying the industry's rates because, like, obviously I'm the guy who controls, like, a puppet string, you know, the entire industry's rates. Yep. That's what I get sometimes accused of when the shit rates are thrown out there. Mind you, do you know the biggest abuse I've copped for any rate, and I don't want you to say what you think it is, but it was actually about a rate that was worked out wrong by someone. And it got sent out across the entire industry for, you know, we were searching for a truck. We thought it was good. Not the job you're thinking of. I don't even think you existed back then. Too busy, you know, at toll. But I was very accessible back then. I was answering the phones. I was everything else. Gosh, we don't set the rates like that. It's more along the lines of a cube of dirt to move is $10 down to Pakenham. Everyone's at $10 to Pakenham. If you've got a relationship, you might get $10.50. Mm. If you're fighting hard for the job, you might get $9.50.
Yep.
Then if you can't get trucks, which is the supply and demand, if you can't get trucks at the end of it, then that's where the industry collective bargaining comes in that you look at. Then all of a sudden the rates start to increase because the guy still needs to move his one cube of dirt for $10. And if that turned into 11, that's not as bad as standing around doing nothing.
Mm.
But then if some other plan hire comes in and now it's 8 and trucks still turn up, it's going to be 7 very soon.
But I think what we need to do in terms of supply and demand, I hope it's going to get busy. I hope now that winter's sort of almost behind us, we've seen some interest rate cuts. I know the government has got a big push on at the moment to try and improve the amount of housing stock is out there, so hopefully we should start to see the subdivisions fire up, but they've been very quiet. Last 12, 18 months, they've been very quiet.
12, yep.
So if we can start to see those fire up, you know, with the cut in interest rates, hopefully we can start to see work. But the challenge that we have as owner drivers is to make sure that those rates move quickly. Because summer will soon be over.
I think the thing for owner drivers is to make sure that you stay with the market. And if the market rates are up, because we can't be paying owner drivers, like if a brickie's getting $1 and an owner driver gets $10 to move dirt, if the brickie gets $1.50, you can get your $15. There's no point in trying for $25. We've spoken about this before, because all it does is make for alternative solutions to be able to happen as well. If you want to keep with the market and get slightly more, because this is what happened at the $3,000 or $3,500 for a quad. That was a lot of money, and still the complaints happen.
But we're nowhere near, bit of a blip, right? We're nowhere near that point. Like
the low rates are just a blip on the flip side. Just flip the coin over, Luke. You'll be happy.
Fucking 2 years now.
I think it's a bit of a longer blip, but it's still a blip.
Like, you don't see Cartage Australia trying to get into the earth. Like, they're out at the Northeast Link because that's where the rates are good. But they're not out in the subdivisions. Like, Linfox hasn't got a fleet of tippers out there doing this work because we're not at a point yet where the rates are at a level where bigger guys are looking at it and thinking, oh, I can make a dollar out of that.
I'll tell you what, there was some at $3,000 though. When the rates were $3,000, there was some big noises starting to be made from big players in the game. I reckon if there was stock on the ground of trucks to buy,
they would have got in and done it.
Yeah.
I don't think the rates, I mean, I'd love to get paid $3,000 a day, but I don't think it's good for the industry.
No, I don't think it's sustainable for the builders and everything else. That, like, the other people sitting in this chair, that if I told him his cube of dirt went from $10 to $30, he goes, well, the price of an apartment is only going up 7% or 5% or nothing a year.
Yeah, poor property developers, they're the real losers. Is that what you're trying to say?
They can be, yeah. Absolutely, just like the poor plant hire owners. But we'll finish on that, Luke. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Luke McCrone.
Pleasure as always.
Secretary of VTU. Thank you for coming. And like, subscribe, comment, share, tell everyone that you're doing it so we get better and better guests. Tell everyone you're listening.
So we get better and better guests. It's all downhill from here. What do you mean?
I think we peaked at episode 15 or something, isn't it, Louis? Yeah.
13.
Here we go. All right. Thank you very much, Luke. Speak soon. You can take your Starbucks top with you.
Beautiful. Wonderful.
Thank you.